Good day, and thank you for standing by. Welcome to the Premier First Quarter One Trading Update Analyst Conference Call. At this time, all participants are in listen-only mode. After the speaker presentation, there will be a question-and-answer session. To ask a question during the session, you will need to press star and one on your telephone keypad. Please be advised that today's conference is being recorded. And I would now like to hand the conference over to your first speaker today, Mr. Alex Whitehouse. Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, and good morning, everybody. And thanks for joining this, our Quarter One Trading Update call that covers the 13 weeks to the 3rd of July 2021. So I'll give a brief introduction to our first quarter trading before opening up the call to questions. And I'm joined, of course, this morning, as always, by Duncan Leggett, our CFO. So I'll start by giving a few headlines on our trading in the quarter. I'll then dive into a few key areas to provide a little bit more detail. And then I'll hand over to Duncan, who can give you a brief reminder of the refinancing that we completed in the quarter as well. And then, as usual, that's when we'll pass the questions. So as a reminder, by the way, today we're also holding our AGM, and that is at 11 a.m. And we'll be holding that virtually again this year. So if any shareholders on the call who'd like to attend and don't yet have the details, please do contact Richard Godden in Investor Relations for details of how to attend this year's meeting. So on then to the quarter one results, and overall I'm really pleased to say that we've had an encouraging start to the year. We've carried on the trading momentum from last year into the first quarter, and that this combined with the significantly reduced interest costs means that we're now seeing our adjusted PBT to be at the top end of our expectations for this financial year. Now, when we spoke to you back in May, we set out a couple of things in terms of how we'll be measuring our progress this year. And I think, first of all, and given the exceptional circumstances this time last year when the UK was in that first quite strict national lockdown during the quarter, and our volumes were equally exceptional, particularly in our grocery business. So we said it would be sensible and appropriate to review our sales performance this year compared to 2 years ago, as well as compared to 1 year ago. So for this quarter, that means we're comparing against the quarter to the end of June 2019. And also, if you remember, we provided then a range of where we expected our Q1 sales were likely to land, and that range was between 5 and 6% growth compared to a couple of years ago. And so we're very pleased, therefore, that we've come in at the top end of that range with growth of 6.3%. compared to the same quarter 2 years ago for the total group. And when we look at our retail grocery sales, and by that I mean if we exclude the out-of-home channels, then these were up 13% during the same period, which compares quite favourably, I think, to how our retail partners have performed over a similar time frame. But for me, most importantly, it's our branded sales. Our branded sales have performed really strongly, up 9.3% on a two-year basis. And when we look at our grocery business, branded sales are up 12% versus 2 years ago. So, you know, essentially the equivalent of 2 years of 6% back-to-back growth, which is clearly well ahead of the historical growth rate of our categories. Now, obviously, that strong branded sales performance is a direct result of us continuing to deploy our branded growth model, and that remains at the heart of what we're doing. So as a reminder, of course, we start with a portfolio of brands which are our leaders in their categories and with very high household penetration. And we then bring to market insightful new products which are based on current consumer needs and trends. And we support our major brands with emotionally engaging and meaningful marketing and TV advertising campaigns. And then finally, and very importantly, we work closely in partnership with our key retail partners, delivering excellent in-store execution for the brands. So during the quarter, therefore, we continued to execute the growth model with pace and with energy. And three of our major brands, Sharwood's, Mr. Kipling and Batchelors, received advertising during the quarter. And again, we brought a number of new products to market. Now, in fact, you might remember that due to the challenges of COVID last year, there were delays to many of the retailers' range reviews. And the range reviews, obviously, those are the windows where we get our new products listed into store. And that resulted in some delays in the introduction of some of our new products from last year. So I'm pleased to say those retailer range reviews are now taking place. And we've seen some really very positive outcomes for our brands and for the distribution of our brands, with much of the delayed new product from last year now coming through into store. And in fact, we've seen a rapid step up in the percentage of sales that we derive from new products, which for the quarter was well ahead of how we ended last year and indeed how we ended the year before. So that's all very positive. And as a result of all that, we've continued, therefore, to perform ahead of the market in the quarter, increasing our volume share versus last year. If we look at the brands that saw the strongest two-year growth in the quarter, and there were quite a large number of them, actually, but in particular, I'd call out Sharwood's, Ambrosia, Bisto, Oxo, and Paxo. All these brands grew in double-digit percentages compared to 2 years ago. And when you think again about the average sector growth rates over a longer period of time, they're clearly very strong performances. And additionally, all these five brands have higher household penetration than the same period in 2019, which demonstrates clearly that some of those new consumers who tried our brands last year during lockdowns are continuing to buy them again this year. In terms of some individual performances, I'd pull out Sharwood's. Sharwood's was again a standout performer for us in the quarter. Sales were up 25% compared to the same period in 2019. Sharwood's received further TV support in Q1, and that was a continuation of the new TV campaign that we started at the end of last year. And we also launched, of course, a number of new products, but that included vegan versions of our korma and tikka masala cooking sauces. And that's as we extend our plant-based eating options across the business. Another brand that had an excellent quarter one was Nissin Noodles. And when we took on the distribution of Nissin products over 3 years ago, sales were pretty modest. But since then, we've taken this premium, authentic Nissin brand. And with the strength of our retail customer partnerships, we've built it into the clear leader in premium cup noodles in the UK, with now almost £20 million of annual retail sales value. Sales over the last 2 years were up a very significant 168% and grew 30% compared to last year. If we move on to sweet treats, now sweet treats, we experienced very different trends to what we saw in grocery categories over the last year. So consumer patterns in buying cake were not as heavily impacted during the lockdown restrictions. And so accordingly, we do not see the exceptional volumes in cake at this time last year, like we did in our grocery categories. So in the first quarter this year, branded sweet treats were actually up by 3.2% versus year ago, and that being driven by Mr. Kipling, which had a very strong start at 7.5% growth in the quarter, and that's coming from things like the low sugar options, such as the 30% less sugar angel and lemon slices, and further success from the new premium range, the Mr. Kipling signature range. In terms of key consumer trends we're seeing, obviously we're seeing people transitioning back towards eating out of home more than they were earlier in the year. And we're also seeing people trying to maintain some of the good habits that they picked up last year, and I'm particularly talking there about eating more healthily. And most consumers are also telling us they still want to try and hold on to the enjoyment they get from cooking at home and eating around the table together as a family. And if we move on to the online channel, and by that, again, I mean sales that we make via our retail partners' online platforms. I know we're all aware that this channel saw very significant growth last year, as lots of people moved to shopping for their groceries online during the worst of the pandemic. And you might remember that following the great deal of effort we've been putting into developing our business in this channel for a few years now, it meant that last year, when the category and when the channel went through that incredible growth phase, we were able to grow even faster than the channel and increase our online market share. So now, as expected, as we start to anniversary that period from last year, what we're seeing is that most of the people who moved to buying their groceries online last year are sticking with it. And so our business through the online channels is nearly double the level it was 2 years ago, and that's in line with the market. As you also know, providing our consumers with a range of healthier options to choose from is very much core to our strategy. Health and nutrition is incredibly important to us, and we've been doing a lot of work over a number of years now to bring more healthier ranges to market for our consumers. And I'm particularly pleased to see that our healthy option ranges in the quarter grew by twice the rate of our branded portfolio versus 2 years ago. So that includes products like our healthier cooking sauces, things like the Sharwood's 30% less fat Coleman Madras sauces, and things like the Lloyd Grossman no added sugar bolognese sauces. If we move now on to our international business, and you'll remember that this is a key strategic growth pillar for the group looking forward, that enjoyed a very strong year last year with growth of 23%. And I'm pleased to say it's carried that momentum forward into the current year, with sales on a two-year basis up 17% in the quarter and holding on to all the gains that it made last year. I've talked before about our strategy for our overseas businesses, which is focused on building sustainable, profitable businesses of scale in selected markets. And we're doing this by applying the same proven branded growth model that we've got in the UK, but adapting it then to the local market conditions and environment. So, for example, in Ireland, where we've already got an established business, we're launching a series of new products that have already been successful in the UK. So things like the Bisto's Southern Style Gravy or the OXO Meat-Free Stock Cubes and the Mr. Kipling Signature range of premium cakes. And we'll also be supporting our brands in Ireland with advertising again later this year. So that's for the second year running. And this approach in Ireland has led to our biggest brands in Ireland, Bisto, Sharwood's and Mr. Kipling, all increasing their market shares over the last 12 weeks. And Bisto sales, in fact, were up by a very strong 11% year on year and also took 180 basis points of share. So it's pretty clear to us that adopting that same brand building strategy in Ireland is now starting to work really well for us. And we've also expanded our category presence in Ireland through entering both the quick meals, snacks and soups category and also home baking. And these are categories where we have not historically been present in Ireland, so and represent wide space for us. And then in Australia, Mr. Kipling and Cadbury Cakes, which are the market leaders of branded cake in Australia, both delivered double-digit sales growth compared to last year. Now, one of the key markets we're looking to expand the business in is North America. And we've previously mentioned that we've been running a trial for Mr. Kipling in Canada, and that's given us some really promising results. We're making some tweaks to the model based on what we've learned, and then we'll move to a full national rollout in the second half of this financial year. And then looking to the USA, it's clearly a much bigger market than Canada, we're continuing to work with our partner, Western Foods, and preparing a similar launch of Mr. Kipling into the US market, and we'll have the benefit, of course, of taking some of the learnings from that Canadian trial forward into our US model. Now, another of our strategic growth pillars is taking the brand building capabilities that we've demonstrated in our core categories in the UK and expanding into new categories. And so we already have four live initiatives in market that take us out of our traditional categories and into what I would describe as logical adjacent categories. In fact, these have already delivered over £6 million of sales in the last 12 months and in what I have to say are the early stages of this strategy. And in most cases, this involves utilising the strong brand equities that we've got available to us in our portfolio and expanding their presence into those adjacent categories. So, for example, we've launched Mr. Kipling and Cadbury into baking mixes, which is a very logical extension to have the leading cake brands in cake baking mixes as well. We've also introduced a range of rubs and marinades under the OXO brand, and we brought cake herbs and spice to market, which again is white space category for us in the UK. And there are further initiatives in the pipeline for the second half of the year, and that also includes a significant expansion in our plant-based offerings. Now, I'd just like to touch quickly on non-branded sales. So overall revenues were 10.9% lower than 2 years ago, but there are a few moving parts going on in here. So in the grocery business, sales were down 10.1% compared to 2 years ago, and that was due to declines in our business to business volumes that supply out of home eating. So, you know, unsurprisingly, that's down versus 2 years ago, but, you know, promisingly now starting to recover versus year ago. I should also point out that this was partially offset by stronger demand for the non-branded grocery products that we sell into our retail customers, which in fact were up just over 10% over the same time period. And then in sweet treats, non-branded sales were down 14.9%, and that's due to the rollover impact of low-margin contract exits, which were, you might remember, decisions that we took last year. So with that being a review of the first quarter's trading, I will pass over now to Duncan to cover the refinancing that we completed in the quarter.
Thanks, Alex, and good morning, everyone. So just a reminder, when we announced our full-year results back in May, we announced the new revolving credit facility. That's $175 million with a new Refresh Bank Group, which we think is the best place to support us through the next phase of our strategy. That matures in 2024, and it's got 2 one-year extension options beyond that. We also announced the issuance of a new bond. The protest was really strong, and we chose to upsize the size of the bond to $330 million, and following what ended up being 2 upgrades from credit ratings agencies in 9 months, which is really strong recognition of our progress and our strong financial results, we priced them at 3.5%, which we think was a great result and one, frankly, that we're really pleased with. So this replaced the $300 million of fixed rate notes, which were priced at 6.25%, so a significant improvement on interest. And this bond refinancing, together with the retiring of the final $20 million of the $210 million floating rate notes, will reduce our interest cost by nearly half compared to 2 years ago. And this forms a key part of our expectations for adjusted PBT this year. So that brief overview, I'll hand back to Alex to wrap up.
Thank you, Duncan. And so to wrap up, really, we've made a very encouraging start to the year, particularly in our brand of business. And I can also say now that quarter two is also off to a good start. So looking forward to the rest of the year, and as you'd expect, we'll be bringing further new products to market. And as last year, supporting in total 6 of our key brands with advertising in the UK, along with Mr. Kipling and Bisto in Ireland. And we'll also continue to focus on building our overseas businesses and expanding our UK presence into new categories. So I think, you know, given the encouraging start to the year, the strong plans that we know we've got in place, and as Duncan mentioned, the significantly lower interest costs compared to last year, you know, that means that we're now seeing just PBT at the top end of our expectations for this financial year. So thank you for your time. I'll now pass back to the operator, and we'd be very happy to take your questions.
Thank you. We will now begin the question and answer session. And as a reminder, if you wish to ask a question, please press star and 1 on your telephone keypad. Once again, that is star and 1 to ask a question. And your first question comes from the line of Charles Hall from Peel Hunt. Your line is now open.
Morning, everyone.
Morning, Charles.
Morning.
Obviously, a really good start to the year with that 6.3% growth. Did that give you some confidence for the run rate for the remainder of the year? And is that sort of a good target level of growth that you might expect as we go through the quarters? That's the first question. And secondly, obviously there's much more chat about inflation in the market as well as labour shortages. Do you want to just give your experience to date and how that might be impacting on margins or otherwise?
Yeah, sure. Thanks, Charles. So, look, I think run rate, yes. You know, we're really pleased to have seen, you know, this is obviously a transitionary quarter, wasn't it? People returning to out-of-home, returning to out-of-home eating and just wanting to see how that settled down in the quarter. It's played out, you know, pretty much exactly as we modelled, if not a little better, as you've seen, in the sense that we came out at the top end of where we expected to be. So that's what's giving us a, you know, confidence for the rest of the year. I think specifically looking at quarter two, given we've seen the start of that, I would say that we would expect, you know, quarter two trading to be in that same 5-6% range that we gave guidance for Q1. You know, and that's as far as I probably want to look out at this moment. In terms of inflation, we're in a very similar position to we were when we last talked about this interim. But I think, you know, we're seeing low single to mid single digit input cost inflation. That's in line with our expectations coming into the financial year. And so as a consequence, our plans that we put in place for the year are dealing with that. So it's a combination of three things, really: hedging and price increases that we already put through to the market at the beginning of the calendar year, and then internal cost saving measures. So, you know, I would say there's no real new news there for us, and we're quite comfortable that we've got it covered.
That's helpful, thanks. And just sticking on the sales line, obviously you gained share in every category in the quarter and last year, so that's been really impressive. And maybe that was a bit helped by the pandemic and focus on the leading brands. Do you want to just comment on what's happening now with range reviews happening, new product launches? Is that meaning that you're actually going to be able to grow on your existing position, or may you give up a bit of shelf space to new competitors?
Thanks. Well, you know, I think the first thing to say, I'll reiterate one of the comments I made earlier, is that, you know, range reviews are happening now. We're very happy with the outcomes that we're seeing. They're very positive for us. And I think that's in two respects. One is the sort of new product pipeline that we built up during last year, not all of which made it to market for the pandemic reasons that we talked about. And of course, this year's new products are all now going out the door and landing. And we seem to be doing very well out of that in terms of initial distribution. And then also, as retailers look to, you know, optimize their range, we tend to be net beneficiaries of that. So as shelf space is given to the best selling SKUs in the category, in order to make sure that they don't run out of stock on a heavily shopped Saturday afternoon, and that often means that more shelf space goes to, you know, our brands, because often we're the leader in the category and we often have the best selling SKUs. So, you know, net, we come out of these things and we are doing now, you know, in a positive position.
Makes sense. Thanks, Alex.
Thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Martin Deboo from Jefferies. Your line is now open.
Yeah, morning, everybody. Martin Deboo at Jefferies. I have similar questions to Charles, so I won't repeat them. Let me ask another one, which is much more general. Trading's going well, so you've given us the luxury of just sort of looking a bit longer term. You know, with the cash flow envelope now so much more relaxed, if I could use that word, obviously we've all pushed you hard on what you're going to do on M&A, and I'm not going to repeat that this morning. But another potential avenue is, are there any bigger scale capital projects you would now be tempted to undertake that would be transformational to the business, either in top line or bottom line? In other words, organic expansion rather than the more obvious one of M&A. Because, you know, the problem going back 5 years was you were just so cash constrained you could only accept short payback projects. You know, is that thinking changing and evolving?
I mean, it is, Martin. I think, you know, one of the key things is for us is actually investing back into our manufacturing infrastructure. So we run a pretty tight ship when it comes to capital investment back into infrastructure. And every year we sit and look at a list of projects which go across, you know, three buckets really. So one is investing into new capabilities for new products, because obviously new products are the lifeblood of our growth strategy, infrastructure maintenance and then also cost reduction and efficiency improvement. And I think what's interesting particularly on the cost reduction and stroke efficiency improvement is that, you know, for each of our manufacturing sites, you know, we look down a list and then draw a line, and the line is driven really where our cash and capital envelope has allowed us to draw it, as opposed to where the paybacks are attracted. So what this means ultimately is that we can go further down the list. I don't know if you want to talk more about capital allocation.
Obviously CapEx is a big part of it, Martin, as you rightly point out. I mean, as we've talked about before, obviously dividends, brands being progressive, and obviously, you know, bolt-on M&A, which
which we look forward to sharing more thoughts on as we progress down the line. But I think Alex's point on CapEx is a, you know, there's a really good one. And I guess your point, are there any big transformational ones? I think it's very much moving further down the list of projects that we've already got, and there's quite some interesting technology around making factories greener, etc., that are also on the table as part of that.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Nicola Mollard from Investec. Your line is now open.
Hi, morning. Couple of questions really around labour. Sort of Charles sort of touched on it, and you covered it off with a general inflation comment. But obviously, with the pingdemic, as they're now calling it, is that an issue for you? I know you're less labour intensive than some of our companies that we follow. So that's one. But also, I suppose with COVID costs, I mean, are you now starting to take some of those additional practices and costs out of the factory, or are you going to wait until later in the year?
Morning, Nicola. Thank you for that. Actually, yes. So labour, I think, you know, particularly with reference to the pandemic, you know, we of course have seen an increase in the number of people self-isolating over the last few weeks, just as everybody has. To be honest, it's tailed off a bit in the last week. So we have seen rates actually fall slightly in the last week. But we're obviously quite heartened by the announcement from the government this morning, which does look as though there'll be some room for us to make some changes there. But, you know, absences is, you know, certainly well within what we saw last year, and therefore well within our proven capability to manage it. So it's certainly not created as a specific issue. But as I say, we're quite, you know, we're welcoming the news from this morning. In terms of COVID costs, so I think if we talk about measures first, so the distancing measures, the hygiene measures, and everything that we put in place last year, they all remain. And we've made no changes, and we've got no immediate plans to make any changes. And that's because we still think it's the right thing to do to keep our colleagues safe, and also from a business continuity point of view. In terms of costs, you know, the biggest cost for us last year was essentially with labour, was absence. And absence levels are, as I say, below a year ago. And we expect them to, you know, reduce ultimately as we go through the year. So, you know, that obviously is therefore, you know, a net reduction versus year ago for us in that respect.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Doriana Russo from HSBC. Your line is now open.
Thank you very much. Good morning, everyone. I just wanted to go back to your comments on current trading for Q2. You said that it's trending in the same direction as Q1, so hinting at plus 6% year on year. I was wondering if you can make any comment of whether, you know, during the course of Q1 you have seen any changes versus 2 years ago. So have you observed a consistent 6% increase, or is that changing, especially since the out-of-home trade channel has completely reopened? And my second question goes back to your new product launches. You said that there was an acceleration this year versus last year. So can you give us a sense of how much sales from new products have been sold this year versus 2 years ago, please?
Hi, morning. Thank you. Yes. So, I mean, if we look at the shape of Q1, I mean, clearly we did see, you know, people starting to return to eating out of home, but it did happen quite quickly. And I think once restrictions were removed, you know, people were pretty desperate to get out and about. So, you know, I think, you know, you can think about the implications of that. But frankly, I'd say the fluctuations across the quarter were pretty small, but obviously we don't release individual month numbers. But certainly what we are saying is that, you know, we're comfortable with the run rate, and that's why we're saying that, you know, we expect to be in the same 5-6% range for Q2. Sales for new products. So, you know, on a quarterly basis, it's not the number we would normally talk about, but certainly the ratio of sales from new products is a really ticked up very strongly in quarter one, And as I said, it's ahead of where we ended last year. And it's actually ahead of where we ended the year before as well, which, you know, pre-pandemic. So we're really, you know, very pleased with the direction of travel there. And as I say, I think it's largely linked to the fact that those range reviews are now happening. So we would, you know, we're expecting to make good progress on our sales from new products this year.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Darren Shaley from Shaw Capital. Your line is now open.
Thank you, and morning, gents. Morning, everyone. A couple for me, if you don't mind. Firstly, on the pension, I think we're on, 15 months away now from sort of your pension announcement in April last year. I mean, is there any colour you can give us on sort of progress? Can you confirm you're sort of broadly on track with the guidance that you gave at that time? And are there any sort of staging posts we should be looking for over the next sort of 12, 18 months in that process? And then another one just on SKUs. I mean, obviously, when COVID hit last year, we saw a lot of SKU rationalisation. Basically, retailers ensuring products were on the shelf. That would have brought some efficiencies, I would have thought. I mean, where are we now in terms of sort of SKU counts, maybe relative to sort of pre-COVID levels? Are we getting back to that sort of ranges? Thank you.
And so I'm going to hand over to Duncan to talk about pensions. That's his specialist subject, and then I'll pick up on the SKU question.
Morning, Darren. thanks for the question. So no, I mean, on pensions, you know, there's a lot of good progress being made by the trustees, and they're doing lots of good things behind the scenes, ranging from sort of opportunistic winding up lump sums exercise that you might have read about in our annual report, which reduces membership data from the Premier Food Scheme, and also changes to the Premier Food Scheme's investment strategies, which was always going to happen once the team that effectively ran the RHM scheme got their hands around all three schemes. So there's been changes to the Premier Foods investment strategy, and in turn we are targeting higher returns from those assets as a result. So as I say, a lot of good things coming. In terms of staging posts, I think the main one is the triennial valuation next year, so that's April 2022. There is a more technical valuation of the Premier Foods sections going on at the moment, so that's at March 21. That is a requirement of the merger, and we'll know more about that in the autumn, but the main staging post will be next year. So I think summary is a lot of good progress being made. Nothing to suggest that what we said previously will change, but obviously with pensions, as we know, there's a lot of factors outside of our control that we can't, they're not perfect visibility of, hence putting in the sort of low, medium and high case when we announced it last year. So hopefully that helps.
Yeah, thanks, Duncan.
So, Darren, moving on to SKU count. So you're absolutely right. When we were in the midst of quarter one and into quarter two last year, where it was essentially all hands on deck from both us and the retailers, just keeping core lines on the shelf, we did, in conjunction with our retailers, what we called suspend some of our, some of our more periphery SKUs, if you like, to make sure the main ones were in stock. But actually that reversed very quickly. So they were never taken out of the range. They were only sort of suspended. And so quite quickly, I would say back end of quarter two last year, those products all sort of came back into distribution. So they were never really removed from the range. They were just sort of put on hold, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Okay, thank you. Cheers, gents.
Thanks, Sam.
Thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Clive Black from Shore Capital Markets. Your line is now open.
Yeah, thank you. Good morning, guys, and well done on your Q1. Just a couple of quick ones for me. Firstly, can you give an indication of how you see the cost of advertising at the moment? Is that something that is becoming a little bit more challenging now we're out of the constraints of lockdown one in particular? And secondly, also just any indication of where sustainability fits in with your Q2, H2 plan for this year, please? Thank you.
Yeah, sure. Morning, Clive. So cost of advertising, I mean, the first thing, and that you'll be very well aware that, you know, as we went through particularly the first half of last year, cost of advertising, was very low, and we took full advantage of that, and we actually increased our investment levels, you'll remember. And we essentially got a double benefit because the cost was lower and the number of people watching at home was much higher because, frankly, there was not a lot else to do, was there? That benefit really was mainly in the first half of last year, a bit into the second. Then we saw advertising costs normalize really at the back end of last year, and that's sort of where we are now, really. No real news of note, I don't think, in that area. Moving on to sustainability, goodness, that's a big question. So, there are a number of key areas here. I mean, we've got, as you'll be aware, and it's in the annual report, we've got a five-pillar sustainability strategy, and we continue to work on all those pillars. In the interest of time, I'll not go through them all now and all the different things we're doing, but, key for us are things like packaging, focusing on encouraging consumers to eat more healthily, and you've seen that in our NPD plans, bringing more plant-based options, more low salt, low sugar, low fat products to market, and that continues to be the key focus within our NPD pipeline. And then there are a number of other things we're doing in terms of reducing our environmental footprint, et cetera. But it would take me a long time to go through them all, Clive.
Oh, okay, look, I understand. I was just whether there was any specific initiatives that we should be looking out for in the next sort of 3 to 9 months. In that respect, just by way of a supplementary, did you have any particularly strong views on Dimbleby's national food strategy as being good, bad or ugly for Premier Foods?
Well, look, I think, we've been clear, for a long time. We fundamentally support the government's intent to encourage people to eat more healthily, and we think that, as a major UK food manufacturer, we've got an important moral responsibility to help deliver that. But I'd also point out to everybody as well that this is also a commercial opportunity for us, because the success of the business over the last few years has been fundamentally based on the fact that we listen to our consumers and we provide new products that are in line with where they're going, their cooking and eating trends. And the single biggest trend in cooking and eating is people trying to eat more healthily. So by fulfilling our moral obligation to help people, we're also actually delivering commercial benefits to the business, because that's what the consumer wants to hear from us. So it remains absolutely centre stage for us as we go forward.
Excellent. Thanks, very helpful. All the best.
Thanks.
Thank you. And your next question comes from the line of Borgeline. Your line is now open.
All right, thank you. Yeah, good morning, Alex Duncan. Thank you for the great trading update. Yeah, I just got two questions. First one is there any progress on the bolt-on acquisitions? Rumours are that Unilever are looking to offload some savoury brands. Is Premier looking to acquire, say, the OXO, rights to the OXO brand in other countries, such as Canada and South Africa, if this is available? And the second question is, what is the cost of the refinancing? Was it in line with the estimates, or was there any improvements in the cost? Thank you.
Thank you. Sorry, I didn't catch that. Can I just check which institution do you represent?
Oh, sorry, yeah, private investor.
Ah, okay, right. So in terms of bolt-on acquisitions, I think we've been quite clear on this one. I mean, the good news is that we are, in a financial position that, should the right bolt-on acquisition come along, then it's now something that we can entertain, which is clearly, different from where we've been historically. There's nothing specific that I'm really wanting to talk about today, but I will remind everybody that, fundamentally, we see ourselves as brand builders. Our core skill set isn't about how we build brands and generate value from brands. That's how we've made the business successful and turned it around. And our core focus is on delivering branded growth from our existing core business, from expanding into new categories, which I've talked about today, and from expanding overseas, all deploying the same brand-based principles. Now, if it made sense to acquire a brand which gave us presence in an additional category, and particularly one that we felt we couldn't do organically, then you know that would make a lot of sense. But you know, there's nothing specific that I'd draw anyone's attention to at the moment. And Duncan, do you want to talk about cost of refi?
Yeah, I mean, we set out projected refinancing cost in our guidance for the year at the prelims, and there's nothing to call out in terms of major differences to that.
Thank you.
Thank you. And the next question comes from the line of Lorana Russo from HSBC.
Yes, sorry, me again. I just have a follow-up question. First of all, I wanted to understand a little bit better what's your current take on your international strategy. There has been some mentioning earlier on in the call in terms of moving into different categories, and I was wondering whether this is going to be like the wider strategy that you're going to look at in the future. And secondly, a question on the competitive environment that you've seen post-pandemic. As the market reopened, have you seen any of your previous player moving more aggressively into the categories or out of the categories, and how are you looking at the private label participation within some of your key areas? If you can make a comment on those one, please.
Yeah, sure, no problem. So our international strategy has not changed since we went through it at prelims, and we're continuing to vigorously execute that. I think your question might have been specifically about new categories overseas.
Yeah.
I would point this to the fact that we would focus always first on going into categories where we've already got expertise from the UK. Because if you think about it, it's categories we know how they work, we know the dynamics, we've already got the NPD pipeline. So, our primary focus is taking our existing brands, our existing products into that focus list of new markets. And essentially, as I said earlier, using the same skills that we've got in brand building, but of course you then have to adapt to the local market environment. So things like promotional techniques will change a little bit, price points will be different, etc. So, you have to adapt to the local environment, but the fundamental way in which one builds brands and generates brand value are fairly universal. So that's the skill set that we're deploying. In terms of competition post-pandemic, I would say no real change, to be honest with you. Most of our categories in all our core categories, we're strong market leaders, and that always is a great advantage, of course. And I think specifically private label, I would say the dynamics are pretty much as they've been for the last few years. I think the key thing that brand owners always have to remember is, your job is to stay ahead of private label, which means you've got to innovate, you've got to be more in tune with where the consumers' needs are going, and you've got to make sure that you're bringing a product that offers genuine benefits and value to the consumer. And if you do that, you'll be successful. But as I say, that's fundamentally core to our model and fundamentally core to what's made the business successful over the last 2 or 3 years. So, I'd say, no change.
Okay, so but coming back to the international strategy, did I understand correctly that you were opportunistically getting into cake baking and other adjacent categories that perhaps are not core for you in the UK?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, and was that just a business opportunity, or is that more broadly the way you want to go about it in the future?
I think this is as we set out in prelims. So, one of our core strategies is to expand into logical adjacent categories, in particular where our existing brands have got relevant brand equity for consumers. So, the example I gave earlier, it makes perfect sense, doesn't it, if you've got the leading brand of cake in the UK to launch a home baking cake mix because it's instantly credible to the consumer. So that's a very good example of where an adjacent category extension works really well. Likewise, we've launched OXO Rubs and Marinades, which gives us exposure to again, another category, and in particular the barbecue season. And again, you know, OXO is instantly credible when it comes to flavouring and seasoning product, that seasoning, you know, protein. So clearly, you know, that extension makes perfect sense in terms of consumer accessibility. And so those are the things that we will look to do. Occasionally, where we think it might be beneficial, as we've done with Cape Herbs and Spice, we've brought in a new brand, and that's a brand that we're distributing, and that gives us presence in herbs and spices where we historically have not been present. So again, you know, another example of white space where it's all on top for us in terms of growth.
Okay, excellent. I think I was trying to understand whether you might be doing the reverse, and therefore if cake baking works internationally, you might bring that in the UK, likewise with some of the other examples that you've made.
Yeah, sure. Well, we actually launched that in the UK first. So that actually came into the UK just over a year ago. It's done very well, and we've now extended it into Ireland, and it's not entirely unreasonable to think we might do so in other markets.
Okay, excellent. Thank you for clarifying that.
Thank you once again. If you wish to ask a question, please press star and one on your telephone keypad. There are no further questions at this time. Please continue.
Okay, I think that wraps everything up, everybody. Thank you very much for investing time with us again this morning. As you see, we're feeling pretty confident and on the front foot. We've had a good start, and it's given us a lot of confidence for the rest of the year. But thanks very much for your time.
Thank you. That does conclude our conference for today. Thank you for participating. You may now disconnect.